From the Three Story Method Podcast Network.
This is the Serial Fiction Show.
I'm Christine Daigle.
And I'm JP Reinbush.
Welcome to the Reader's Serial Fiction Show.
Today, we've got a humorous fantasy story by Aaron Frail called My Three-Year-Old is a Barbarian and Other Parenting Problems. Some jerkwad moon mage shoves the consciousness of Petra's three-year-old into the body of a full-grown barbarian. Petra's stuck in a halfling. There are pissed-off rangers, angry giants, a pompous vampire, and a necromancer out to kill her and her child. Despite being caught in a world where everything threatens to shuffle off her mortal coil, the hardest part is convincing a hulked-out man that the battle axe is not a toy, orcs are not cuddly, and that he should use the potty.
Good times and hope for a better future. Maybe some fun time travel adventures or interdimensional travelers. A toddler stuck in a barbarian and his mom in a halfling. Comedy and is Aaron Frail's jam. When not writing, he can be found teaching, podcasting Aaron's horror show, and screaming while playing guitar for the band Spiral. Life has brought his wife, himself, and his son to Montana, where they reside at the moment. And now a sample of My Three-Year-Old is a Barbarian and Other Parenting Problems, Episode 1.
Henry Hickambottom pondered the inconvenient fact that a dead body was face down in his vegetable garden. He had planned to unearth some potatoes and cut a few sprigs of rosemary for his wife, who was busy filling the family cauldron with stew, when he had noticed the unfortunate soul who had expired between the endives and the fennel. "Myrtle! Myrtle! Myrtle Hickambottom! Get out here!" he called to his wife. "Someone's died in the garden!" She poked her voluptuous form out of the window and frowned at the scene. "Are you sure he's dead?" Myrtle asked. She was never one to make assumptions about anything. The hero of the people, Levantis, could be coming over for dinner, and Myrtle would ask whether he eats mutton. "Of course he's deceased," Henry yelled. "He's face down in the endives." "He could be passed out. Too much to drink. I warned you about that tavern. Too much ale and not enough women folk. No one to keep their husbands in line."
"There are plenty of women folk."
"Are there now?"
"So I'm told. They're upstairs in the rooms."
"So you haven't making eyes with the tavern wenches?"
No, strictly playing cards with the fellas. I've never been upstairs."
"Good, because if I ever caught you..." She brandished a carving knife that glinted in the moonlight and made a chopping motion with the utensil.
"Could we focus on the body at hand?" Henry yelped.
"I'm still not convinced he's dead."
"What am I supposed to do? It could have been the plague. Can't exactly check if he's breathing if he's died of disease. Liable to give it to me. Then I'd be dead in the vegetable garden,"
Henry ranted. "You can poke him with the rake."
"The rake?"
"Yeah, just go do it. Supper is getting cold," Myrtle commanded, and went back inside, humming the same jaunty tune she always did when she cooked. Henry used to love the melody. Now, he saved his vegetable runs so he wouldn't have to be in the house when she made the racket.
"I suppose so. A rake will do nicely. It's always something. Henry fixed a hole in the roof. Henry dig a new latrine pit. The old one's starting to stink." "Of course it's gonna stink. It's a latrine. I'd like to see her on dead body removal for once," Henry grumbled, and stumbled toward the equipment shed in the dark.
He was futzing with the lock when he heard a noise. It sounded like something heavy was being dragged. He turned around, and the corpse stood right behind him. Other than the apparent mobility, the creature was definitely dead. It had straggly black hair, hollow eye sockets, rotted teeth, and maggots wriggling from its cheek. The beast hissed and gave out a rasp.
"Well, spit it out," Henry said. "I don't have all night. I need to get rosemary for the missus. She'll have my head on the spit if I don't get her sprigs."
The thing rasped.
"Do you want some water? Help clear the thing in your throat?"
The creature nodded.
"Right, follow me."
A few minutes, several potatoes, and some sprigs of rosemary later, the unlikely pair sat at the table in the Hickambottom's hovel. Their abode was the one room constitutes the entire house variety, decorated in the peasant chic style because they were very much peasants and not sheiks. Mrs. Hickambottom placed a tankard of water in front of their guest, then turned back to the stew pot. The undead drank until the thing was empty. The liquid drained from the holes in the creature's cheek, throat, and chest as it gulped. But it still seemed satisfied nonetheless. "Now," Hickambottom said, "what was it you were saying?"
So, I love the vibe of the humor in this serial and how the characters are non-reactive to the absurd. You mentioned in the author notes of episode 2 that this story was inspired by the thought of Sauron living with his mother during Lord of the Rings. And that thought was the seed to this parody that we have here. What other inspirations drew you to write this story?
Well, if I'm going to say general inspirations, I would point to Mel Brooks' movies, Monty Python, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the favorite book series of all time, of course. Another great book in that same genre is Year Zero, a more recent one by a guy that wrote about aliens owing a lot of fees from downloading music, which was amazing. And so, I definitely love comedy and which is basically comedy and some other genre. So, that's where this comes from. I just thought, Sauron's been in that tower for a very long time. What would it be like if he was with his mother and she was overbearing? and maybe that's why the all-seeing eye is so angry.
Yes, definitely loved what I've read so far. Very funny. You often write sci-fi and fantasy with this humorous twist, such as Time Burrito, which that cover with the cat sailing through time on a burrito is fantastic. What do you enjoy about writing humor?
Well, I enjoy writing humor because I feel you get a direct connection with your audience. I did a lot of theater in college, and I was also very lucky enough to have a college professor who came from Hollywood writing scene. He created the show Laugh-In in the 60s, and he taught this comedy writing class, and he got us to do all these like comedy radio TV shows. And then later on, a couple of us got together and did late night sketch comedy. And when you're doing comedy, you get, a relationship with your audience that you just can't get anywhere else, because if they like it, they laugh. If they don't like it, they don't laugh. It's very easy to tell how much they enjoy your work. And having had shows where no one laughs and having had shows where everyone's laughing, running the gambit of stuff, I cut my teeth in college with comedy writing. And so, I was able to take my passion for comedy and infuse it into my passion for, fantasy and sci-fi novels and horror novels. So,
yeah, that's definitely a good way to test out material, I'm sure. And speaking of other funny ways to draw from experience, do you draw on your real life experience as a father when you're writing this story?
I am, yes. My son is 4 currently, though he was 2 when I started writing it, and 3 when I finally finished it, to show you how long I've been working on the story. I had no intention to actually let it go so early. My intention was to actually write book 2 and book 3 before actually even releasing it as a book. But then Amazon sent me an email, as I'm sure everyone got, of come do Kindle Vella. And I'm like, well, not doing anything with this story at the moment, so let's test it out, And I felt it was a good way to get it out there as before I still want to go do the next 2, but I it's a good way to have sort of a pre-release, a work in progress, so to speak, even though it's not really a work in progress, in that sense, but, definitely have more plans for it than just Vella.
So sounds like you have book 1 completed, but you have books 2 and 3 still kind of in the works. Do you have it all planned out, Or do you think that audience participation, if there is any with like comments or some way that they can get to you, do you think that participation will play a role in where the story goes?
I think participation is going to play a big role in how it goes. You know, with comedy, especially when you're on stage, having had, you know, stage time in comedy and theater and stuff like that, you gotta go with what the audience likes and responds to, and then, you know, sort of quickly remove what they don't. So it requires you to be a little bit more active, even though I never really did. I mean, I did improv classes, but I never performed improv. But, you know, even though it was fully sketch comedy, written down comedy, you'd still tweak things live while you're doing it. And so I think that's really important. The only thing I have of book two is the title, and I like the title, so I'm happy to share it now. So you're the first time anyone's heard this title on this podcast, but it's going to be called Orcs in Portland and Other Social Justice Issues. So,
oh, I love it.
Yes.
Well, that's a great title. And all of your episode titles are hilarious. So definitely can see that you have a comedy background. What's one thing about this story that you want listeners to know or to be excited about?
One thing I want them to be excited about is the fun that it is. It's, you know, if you've enjoyed Lord of the Rings, any of the Lord of the Rings books, it's definitely for you, because it's a straight up parody of those novels. But I, you know, I'm also going to infuse other fantasy tropes and pop culture references throughout. So really, the biggest compliment to me as a comedy writer would be to have a group of friends say a line that I've written and make each other laugh. That would be, I've made it. So, you know, my friends and I used to quote Monty Python movies in class instead of paying attention in school, making ourselves cackle with glee. And if I could do that for somebody else, then I've done it. So I made it.
What kind of research goes into making a Lord of the Rings parody, or just a parody in general?
Well, it depends on the needs of the parody. My most research intensive book was actually book three of the Time Burrito series, because in book three of the Time Burrito series, they go to a dystopian future where all knowledge has been wiped from the planet except anything to do with the name David. So anything David related has survived. And in this new future, there's two big churches, the Davidites and the Davists, and they're fighting these like brutal holy wars on whether the Almighty's name Dave or David. And of course, they talk about the scriptures of the New Covenant and, you know, the holy hymns of Matthews and Lee Roth, you know. So I had to really go nuts on looking up Davids. I mean, I had, you know, top 10 celebrity David lists on my computer, and I had to like read about people's biographies to see if there's anything in their life that I can use that people would write about as sort of a holy way. So yeah, it really just depends on what I'm looking for. So, you know, with Lord of the Rings specifically, it just, you know, that was just a knowledge of Lord of the Rings. And I love those books. I've read them several times. My wife and I literally watch the extended cut of the movies almost every year. we're waited with bated breath to see what Amazon does with it, you know? So it's like one of my all-time favorite things. So that didn't really take much research, but you know, when I'm doing something weird, like like a Church of David's, well, then I really have to like stretch my research wings and find some weird things that I didn't even know existed. Like I'm pretty knowledgeable. You know, if there's a David category in Jeopardy, I'm on that one.
That would be an amazing Jeopardy category. So in your serial, what character are you excited for readers to read about, and why?
I think the character that excites me the most is Petra, the main character. I try to be a little bit I try to not shy away from difficult subject matter in my parody. So she is a teenage mother, which is really, you know, a thorny issue. And I think writing a comedy about a teenage mom is going to be hard in itself. And I wanted to not disrespect that that it happens, and it's something that is happening here, you know, in the U.S. But I also wanted to also show, you know, that one, it's very difficult for her just being a mom in her situation that she's in, right? So I wanted to show that it's a real challenge for her, in addition to, you know, the fact that she's battling ogres and running away from necromancers and, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, I wanted to insert that kind of, you know, teenage plot line within the story.
Is there anything you haven't explored yet that you plan to or that you want to?
Like as far as within the series or just in general?
I would say both, because I'm actually very interested. You really like to kind of tackle heavier subjects, but with a comedic backdrop. And I kind of like that. So I'm interested to know if you have anything that you haven't explored yet that you kind of want to hit either in the serial or outside of it.
Yeah. So, you know, within the serial, I decided to go for, you know, a teenage motherhood as far as like a issue. And then in Time Burrito, there's a lot of LGBTQ stuff. And especially in the fourth book, I'm really exploring a lot of like transgender stuff in there. So there is going to be a lot of subject matter, you know, that is difficult, but, you know, I have a tendency to let the morality, I would say, of the stuff, the sort of like message come organically from the story. So, you know, if I find a really, good idea that say might tackle issues like systemic racism, which is kind of where I'm leaning to with Orcs in Portland and other social justice issues of kind of going systemic racism on that one. then I'm going to go ahead and put it in there. But if it doesn't come organically from the story, I'm not going to try and force any messages in or any messaging. Like I'd rather have, the story and the character's journey be first and foremost, and then if there is room to put a greater idea in there, then I'll definitely try to work it in.
Excellent. So I want to ask you one more question. What do you like most about writing serial fiction?
I like how quickly it moves. I actually learned a lot with it. In fact, if I can go back and do it again, I would actually even redo the one that I have out there now on Vella. So a lot of the things that I want to change about it are probably just going to show up in the book version of Kindle of this book. So, you know, the Vella is what it is at this point, but so I'm going to stick with that. But, you know, I think writing serial fiction taught me more about moving things more quickly than I'm used to. You know, I'm okay with, you know, taking a while to set up things and have things might move a little bit slower than some people might like, you know?
All right. Well, thank you for coming on and chatting with us.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It was great to be here.
Our thanks today to Aaron Frail for letting us share their episode. If you liked it, you can read the first three episodes free on Kindle Vella. The link is in the show notes.
Also, if you're a writer, we have a companion podcast, The Writer's Serial Fiction Show, where we talk with authors about their stories and discuss the elements of writing compelling serial fiction.
We want to thank you for listening to The Writer's Serial Fiction Show. If you know someone who might enjoy the show, send them your favorite episode link. And if you want to leave an Apple Podcast review, we read all of them and take your suggestions. You can also leave a comment on this episode on our website, serialfictionshow.com. Finally, we now have a Patreon where you can get Serial Fiction Show episodes early and other great stuff. We have tons of things in the works. Check it out at patreon.com/serialfictionshow. Thanks, and we'll see you next time with another Serial Fiction episode. And that's a wrap. I actually remember laughing, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think I used to watch reruns of it when I was a kid. All I remember is this guy that would say, like, it's very interesting, but stupid.
Yes.
But interesting, but stupid.
I asked my professor if he was the one that wrote that line, and he was.
That was such a great line.
I was
See, I'll quote that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's funny because I watched it when I was a kid too. It was like Nick at Night reruns, and then here's the guy that made that show teaching a class when I go to college, and I'm like, oh,
that was a funny show. I mean, it was in the 60s or whatever, even dated, it was still funny when I watched it. You know,
yeah,
20 years later or whatever, it would still crack me up. But yeah,
yeah,
it's great having those quotable lines. I mean, Monty Python is definitely the most quotable.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny, like in his class he he showed us this sketch comedy show called Show of Shows from the 50s, which was like Sid Caesar was the main comic of this sketch show. And like when I saw the writing credits of that show, it's like pick someone who is famous and they were a writer on that show. Like Mel Brooks was a writer on the show. Woody Allen was a writer. What's that guy that does all the play? Neil Simon, I think. Not Neil Simon, that's the singer, right? his name has Simon, right? Anyways, but yeah, there was a whole bunch of really famous people that wrote that show. And it was interesting that it was like sketch comedy from the 50s, but it was really funny, like to us, like, you know, going to college in the early 2000s.
I wonder if they had a writer's room and just did it all together. That would be a really fun job.
I know.
Working with a bunch of comedians in a writer's room. Anyway, sorry, I just wanted to nerd out about Lap in there a little bit. That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah.